It's series 14 of our media cast. Stay tuned for the last 10 minutes where we overview our current, future, and past series. This one is on Euro 2024 qualifying. We're looking at Group I, Switzerland, Israel, Romania, Kosovo, Belarus, and Andorra. Here we go. It's the International Soccer Preview by Soccer Files Canada, Series 14. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Connor. And today we are looking at Group I for Euro 2024 qualifying. This group includes Switzerland, Israel, Romania, Kosovo, Belarus, and Andorra.
Right, and stay tuned at the end for info about our past and current series and also future series. But we're going to get on directly with the group here. So, yeah.
Yeah, so this series features a deep dive into the history of Euro Cup qualifying for each of these teams. And we will cover our usual information.
Yeah, so we're going to look at three sections that we'll cover in this podcast. So part one will be to introduce the teams in the group and a bit of their geography and demographics. Part two is an in-depth team-by-team overview, and this one features a deep dive into Euro Cup qualifying history. And part three will be a comparison of teams. We'll look at their rankings, head-to-head records, odds, and we're going to have a discussion of their prospects and our predictions. A couple of games have been played already, but I don't know the results.
All right, so what's your hook for this group?
A hook. Okay, Connor, I got to be honest with you. I was trying to come up with one for this one. And all I had was that there was one team that's been kicked around like a soccer ball themselves. And then I actually preferred the one you came up with, which was there may be some new faces emerging from this group. So pick the one you like there.
Yeah, a couple teams with... you know, not a lot of history in the tournament itself. So we'll see if opportunity knocks.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into it. So we'll begin part one with an overview of their geography, where the country is and population and stuff.
Yeah. So beginning with Switzerland, their nickname is NATI, which is short for the national team. They have a population of 8.7 million. And Switzerland's a mountainous landlocked country in Western Europe, surrounded by France, Germany, Austria, and Italy.
All right. Well, the pot two team is Israel.
Israel. Yeah. The nickname is the Sky Blues. They have a population of 9.7 million, so a bit larger than Switzerland. It's not in Europe, Israel, but rather in the Middle East, with a coastline on the Eastern Mediterranean.
All right. And pot number three, Romania.
Romania, their nickname is the Tricolori, or the Tricolors. Romania has a population of 19.3 million, which is actually 10th among UEFA members. And it's a large country in southeastern Europe. It's south of Ukraine, east of Hungary and Serbia, and then north of Bulgaria with a small coastline on the Black Sea as well.
All right. And fourth team, pot four, Kosovo.
Yeah, Kosovo. Their nickname is the Dardanians. Their population is 1.7 million. And Kosovo's a small landlocked country in southeastern Europe, south of Serbia, which it declared independence from in 2008.
Okay, and pot five, Belarus.
Yeah, Belarus. Their nickname is the White Wings. Belarus's population is 9.5 million people. And it's a large country in northeastern Europe, bordered primarily by Russia, Ukraine, Poland, and then the Baltic states.
Okay, and finally we have Andorra.
Andorra, their nickname is also the Tricolors, same as Romania. Same blue, yellow, and red colors as well. Andorra has a population of just 80,000 people. And it's a very small mountainous country on the border of France and Spain. And it's kind of roughly north of Barcelona.
All right. Well, let's just take a look at them in comparison to each other, especially the population.
Yeah, so the largest country in the group is Romania with 19.3 million people. Like I said, 10th largest among UEFA members. Then we have three teams very similar. We have Israel at 9.7 million people, Belarus just a shade back at 9.5 million people, And then Switzerland has 8.7 million people. So again, pretty equally sized countries. Kosovo has 1.7 million people. And then Andorra is a very small country with just 80,000 inhabitants.
A well-crowded stadium, I would say.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's
a
get
Wembley
on.
Or a new camp.
What's that?
A Wembley or a new camp.
Yeah, right.
There.
Okay, let's get into the history. We begin with Switzerland and their participation and achievements. So first international game for them was 1905, and they missed the first World Cup, but participated consistently from the second in 1934. And that's true also of the Euro Cup, which they didn't enter in 1960, the first one, but always did thereafter. In terms of achievement, they were regular attendees at the World Cup, around the time that the Euro Cup began, but they failed to reach both in a long slump from 1966 to 1994, but have reached both clubs, both cups regularly since then. In terms of success, they've done much better in the World Cup than in the Euro Cup, having passed the group stage seven times in World Cup competition, and that includes four times since 1994, but never passing the group stage of the Euro Cup until 2016.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, and a bit more of a close-up on the World Cup history. It's still an overview, though.
Yeah, so Switzerland were not a top team in the past, but actually a force to be reckoned with, reaching the quarterfinals in three of their first four World Cups. After 1954, they fell off, qualifying for two cups until 1966, but losing all games there, then disappearing from the world stage altogether for 30 years. They made an appearance in 1994, but missed the next two cups thereafter. From 2006, though, they have not only qualified consistently, but passed the group stage in all five tournaments except 2010.
All right. Well, we'll do the same for the Euro Cup, kind of an overview. So Switzerland were just entering into their weak years of World Cup non-qualification when the Euro Cup began. So just as they didn't qualify for the World Cup roughly 30 years from the mid-60s to the mid-90s, so too did they miss all Euro Cups. Actually, they came close in 1972 and in all cups from 1984 onwards. So it stands to reason that when the cup expanded from 8 to 16 teams in 1996, they started to qualify more regularly. Nevertheless, they still fell short in 2000 and in 2012, and they didn't pass the group stage until 2016, when the cup expanded further to 24 teams. And that had actually 16 teams passing the group stage rather than eight. So this was not just a result of the cup expanding, but also an improvement in their form, which we can also see in their World Cup record. And they earned their best finish in 2020 with a quarterfinal finish. On we go to the deep dive.
All right, so we'll look at Euro qualifying history here. Switzerland did not enter the first cup in 1960, but entered in 1964. Qualification was three rounds of knockouts, and they fell at the first hurdle, bested by Netherlands. 1968 changed to a group format, and they went undefeated at home, including a draw with group winner Italy. But they lost all on the road, including to Cyprus, and they finished third behind Romania.
Bit inconsistent there. In 1972, we saw them win their first four matches, but in the last two, they faced the biggest opponent, England. They lost 2-3 at home, and the matter was decided already. A tie in England in the last game was a bit of a cold comfort there. 1976 was a weak campaign where they lost all on the road, and they finished last behind Ireland and Turkey.
1980 was weaker still. Their only points, two wins over Iceland, who they finished ahead of in fourth, behind East Germany, who were third. In 1984, though, they finished ahead of East Germany, despite being bested by them. An undefeated record at home included a win over Belgium, who they finished in second behind. 1988 also saw them undefeated at home, but three of the four games were draws. Two draws away meant they were competitive, but it only earned them a fourth place finish ahead of Malta.
Well, 1992 was a bit more competitive until the last two games, at least. A home draw with Scotland and a loss in Romania at the end left them second amidst the top four, who were just separated by 2 points. Only Scotland, though, in first place advanced.
It would have been enough to advance in 1996 when the Cup expanded to 16 teams. They didn't need it, though, as they advanced in first place, going undefeated on the road this time, and earned passage to their first Cup. They were bested by Italy and Denmark in the next campaign in 2000, but won all other games. That left them tied with Denmark, and they would have taken second place if the criteria were its goal difference, but the head-to-head criterion saw Denmark take the advancing spot.
All right. Well, bested by Russia in 2004, they nevertheless finished first, even in the face of road ties with Albania and Georgia. In 2008, qualification was earned by dint of co-hosting, so we move on to 2012. In 2012, though, they didn't qualify. Their road record was inconsistent, tying England once again, but losing in Montenegro and Wales. Wales, who they had beaten 4-1 at home. So they finished third in 2012, and that was a point behind Montenegro.
The 2014 World Cup campaign marks an improvement in their form, and they have passed the group stage of every cup since. Qualification in 2016 for the Euro Cup saw two losses to England, who ended with a perfect record, and an early loss in Slovenia. But they won all their other games to finish well ahead of Slovenia in second place.
Nice. All right. And for 2020, their most recent campaign, we're going to take a bit of a closer look.
So Switzerland were bested by Denmark, but nevertheless finished ahead of them, first in their qualifying group. The only other points dropped being a draw in third place, Ireland. Georgia and Gibraltar were the other teams in the group. So in the Euro tournament, they tied Wales and lost to Italy, but they beat Turkey to earn passage as a third-place finisher. They then beat France on penalties, but lost to Spain the same way in the quarterfinals. So a good tournament, especially after the group stage.
Yeah, and their best finish in the Euro Cup, where they tend not to do as well. Let's see how they did in the World Cup then, where they do a little better.
Yeah, so Switzerland tied Italy in both legs, and they also tied Northern Ireland away, but they otherwise won all their games, proving more consistent than Italy and finished first in the qualifying group ahead of them. At the World Cup, they beat Cameroon in their opening game of the tournament and almost held Brazil to a goalless draw until giving up a goal in the 83rd minute. A tremendous game with Serbia saw them win and finish second. However, in the knockout round, they were devastated by Portugal, suffering a big 6-1 loss.
That's a big loss for a pretty defensive team, eh?
Definitely, yeah. Switzerland known for their steely defense.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see finally how they did in their 2022-23 UEFA Nations League campaign. They were in League A there.
Yeah, Switzerland were in League A, as you mentioned. It was a bit of an odd campaign. They lost their first three games to Czech Republic, Portugal, and Spain, so things were looking pretty dire. But then they went and won their next three, so they had a one win and one loss record with every team in the group. Their 9 points saw them actually finish 2 points out of first, but still in third place. But it's good enough to remain in League A for the upcoming edition.
Right. Okay. And we're going to finish Switzerland with a look at their players. So most of the team is 25 or older, with a lot of them heading into their 30s now. And so for the time being, this is at a peak of strength with a mature squad, and it should last through this campaign and through the Cup. After that, however, it's a bit concerning because they don't have a lot of players to rebuild with. So Jan Sommer of Bayern Munich and Granit Xhaka of Arsenal are probably their biggest names and club affiliations. And Fabian Schär of Newcastle, a little behind, I would say. All are in their 30s. Jordan Shaqiri and Ricardo Rodriguez are also in their 30s and have already moved from big clubs to what I might term as retirement clubs. Among players in their 20s, although over 25, is Emmanuel Akanji of Manchester City, goalkeeper Gregor Kobel of Borussia Dortmund, Ire Komert of Valencia, and Denis Zakaria of Chelsea. So the rest play for respectable Swiss or European clubs. Among the few youth, though, only Noah Akifor of Red Bull Salzburg stands out. What do you make of the squad there, Connor?
Yeah, I think it's a squad that will need to regenerate. They've had a lot of success in recent years, and a lot of these players, even Jordan Shaqiri, you know, who's kind of, you know, left the Premier League and went to some, you know, smaller clubs, you know, these players have still carried them through for a lot of years. So I do think that they will look for a new generation. Brielle Mbolo's a good player. He made an impact in the World Cup. So they do have some players, but yeah, we'll see if they can maintain their form.
Yeah. All right. Well, on we go to Israel, and we'll start with an overview of their participation and achievements. And just in case you hadn't figured it out, I'm sure you would. This is the team I said has been kicked around like a soccer ball, as we'll see. So Israel is a senior team in the world, actually. Only Brazil has entered more consistently than them. From 1934 to 1938, they competed as Palestine. I want to backtrack a little bit because Romania is one of the most consistent enterers too. I should have thrown their name in there. Anyway, back to it. From 1934 to 38, they competed as Palestine. As Israel in 1950, many teams refused to play them, and their long search to find a home region began. So they have been placed in UEFA, in the Asian region, in the Oceanic region, and in the African region. But broadly speaking, they were in the Asian region, AFC, from 1956 to 1970, and then in no region from 1970 to 1992, but loosely associated with UEFA at times. And finally, they became a full member of UEFA from 1992 onwards. Do you want to talk about their achievements?
Sure. In terms of achievement, Israel's only qualification for the World Cup was in 1970, when they took the spot allotted to Asia. They otherwise came close in 1958, reaching a special playoff, and in 1990, reaching an intercontinental playoff, just one step from the cup in both cases. At the regional level, they were very successful in their Asian Cup period from 1956 to 68, finishing in the top four for their first four tournaments and winning as hosts in 1964. Since their move to UEFA's Euro Cup from 1996, they have never qualified, but here two have come close, reaching playoff rounds in 2000 and 2020.
All right, so this may be one of their best chances to make it. Meanwhile, we'll take a look at the World Cup overview in a bit more detail. So Israel was bounced around the world football with no small hint of anti-Semitism. They were in a qualifying group with Egypt and Turkey in 1934, playing under the name of Palestine. In 1958, several teams paired with them in the knockout rounds refused to play them, and that included such unlikely countries as Indonesia and Sudan. Ultimately, a special playoff was devised with Wales, who agreed to play them, and Wales got something of a golden ticket into the cup by winning that playoff. 1962 saw them playing qualifying rounds with Cyprus and Ethiopia. And in 1970, they were shunted off to a strange grouping of Asian, Oceanic, and just random other teams like Rhodesia, who as a group were given one qualification spot. They won that group, and 1970 became their only successful qualification. And they did reasonably well at the Cup, tying Italy and Sweden, having lost to Uruguay in their opener. They qualified with Asian teams for the following two cups and with European teams in 1982, and then had a couple of qualifications with Oceanic teams And they reached an intercontinental playoff in the last of these in 1990, where they were knocked out by Colombia. From 1994, they settled into UEFA and have finished mid-table in their groupings throughout their modern history. All right, well, Israel takes us on a brief trip to Asia. We're going to take a look at how they did in the Asian Cup when they were there.
Yeah, so at the time when regional level cups began, they joined the Asian Football Confederation and participated in their first four tournaments starting in 1956. They dominated there, taking second in their first two cups, winning as hosts in 1964 and taking third in 1968. They withdrew from the 1972 tournament and were essentially kicked out of the AFC in a vote led by Muslim countries who refused to play them.
Right, and it took them a while to find a new region to play in, but so they weren't involved in any regional tournaments until joining UEFA and entering qualification for the 1996 Euro Cup. They came close to reaching the cup on their second attempt in 2000, and they finished second in their group there, and they went on to a playoff with Denmark, which they lost. From 2004, they settled into mid-table finishes among their European counterparts. Reaching the playoff in 2020 looks like an improvement, but they actually finished fifth in the table, earning the playoff spot due to their UEFA Nations League record. So there too, they lost the playoff round and have yet to reach the cup. Okay, and let's take a look. We'll take a look at their Asian Cup history because it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, Israel's first regional tournament was in the 1956 Asian Cup. Qualification was divided into three zones, Eastern, Central, and Western. Israel was in the Western zone where three rounds of knockout qualification were planned for the eight teams, Iran, India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Nepal, Burma, now Myanmar, and Ceylon, now Sri Lanka. Everyone except Israel and Afghanistan withdrew from the first round, and then Afghanistan withdrew from the second round and paired with Israel, thus they qualified automatically.
All right. 1960 was a group stage qualification with all games played in India. After a 3-0 opening loss to Iran, Israel went undefeated. And despite being bested by Iran, they took first place and the only qualification spot over them due to Iran's inconsistency. Israel otherwise only tied Pakistan in their last game.
In 1964, Israel qualified automatically as host. The following tournament in 1968 would be their last. For that, they qualified automatically as Afghanistan and Kuwait both withdrew from the qualifying group. There is mention of Israel being slated to host the 1972 Asian Cup, but if that is the case, their own withdrawal caused it to be changed to Bangkok, Thailand. Reasons for the withdrawal are unclear, but it must surely have had something to do with Muslim and Asian nation and Arab nations' refusal to play them. In 1974, Kuwait led a charge to expel Israel from the AFC, and the vote passed with 17 yeas, 13 nays, and 6 abstentions.
Yeah, so a bit of a tough road for Israel. So they wandered without a region to play in. Oddly, they had not qualified for the World Cup with Asian teams when they were in the AFC, but they did do so for the two World Cups after being kicked out of the AFC. Their World Cup campaigns in 1974 and 78 played amongst Asian teams. In 1994, they received full membership in UEFA and joined the Euro Cup, the regional tournament, for the first time in 1996.
That's right. So a bit of a jump in time there. That 1996 campaign started with a win over Poland, and they went undefeated at home, including ties with top two finishers Romania and France. However, a win in Azerbaijan were their only points on the road, and they finished fifth of six. In 2000, a competitive campaign saw them finish second atop a pile of three teams separated by 1 point, Austria falling behind them. That took them to a playoff where they lost both legs heavily to Denmark.
Yeah, they were less competitive in 2004 and actually suffered a draw at home to Malta. They bested Cyprus to finish third of five ahead of Cyprus, but were well out of second place. 2008 was a large group of seven teams, and besting Russia and tying England were good results there. The table finished with Russia in second, with Israel and England tied 1 point behind. Israel ended fourth with an inferior goal difference, so finished in fourth behind England. Croatia was the winner, by the way, there.
Yeah, close group, though.
Mm-hmm.
In 2012, they lost all games to Greece and Croatia, who finished well ahead of them. But third of six meant they were quite consistent over the teams below. 2016 was an unremarkable campaign. An away tie with in-form Wales and a home win over Bosnia-Herzegovina, leaving them in fourth behind both.
Okay, well, that was a pretty long deep dive. And let's finish up with a recent tournament. So we're looking at the Euro Cup 2020 campaign.
Yeah, they were in a six-team group. They lost at home only to group winners Poland, beating second place Austria and tying Macedonia and Slovenia, who respectively finished ahead of them. But they lost on all their road games except for a win in Latvia to finish fifth of six in the qualifying group. They nevertheless qualified for the playoff due to their performance in the 2019-20 Euro Nations League, but they lost in the semifinal round to Scotland on penalties.
Okay, so they'll be really hoping to make it this time. Let's see how they did in World Cup 2022 qualification.
Israel lost both games to Denmark and were bested by Scotland, both of whom finished ahead of them. But they placed third in the six-team qualifying group, finishing ahead of Austria, with whom they traded home wins.
Okay, so pretty interesting head-to-head history with Austria there. Finally, we're going to look at their 2022-23 UEFA Nations League campaign.
Yeah, Israel were in League B. That included Iceland, Albania, and Russia, but Russia was disqualified after their invasion of Ukraine, so it left a three-team group. And Israel tied Iceland home and away 2-2, and then beat Albania home and away 2-1. So that put them in first place, and they have been promoted to League A. So an impressive achievement for Israel there.
Yeah, an impressive achievement. A bit of luck with the top team being disqualified there. And this is the basis for their being a pot two team here. So do you think they're kind of overrated in general?
Yeah, I mean, the more we've done these podcasts, the less a fan I am of the UEFA's pot system. It was a good performance in League B, but, you know, Iceland, Albania, and no third team is not the strongest of groups. There are a lot stronger League B teams there. So It was a good job to win the group, but I don't think you can necessarily say it reflects a huge upswing in form.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame them. They made the best of a lucky situation, and it leads to a lucky situation here, and they'll be hoping to make the best of it. Here. Anyway, let's finish with a look at their players. So they are losing the services of two top forwards in Aaron Zahavi with PSV Eindhoven until recently, and Moanes Dabur with Hoffenheim. I'm retiring from the national team at just 30 years old, Dabur there. Brivas Nacho, 35-year-old and with 88 caps, is also retired. So a couple of their biggest club affiliations, goalkeeper Ophir Marciano of Feyenoord and captain Eli Dasa of Dynamo Moscow, are in their 30s, but probably have a campaign or two left in them. At the other end, they have some youth with potential. We have seen, I think I got the first name wrong, last name Solomon. Do you know the first name there?
Yeah, Manor.
Yes, Manor Solomon, who has sometimes dazzled in the Premier League with Fulham. And they have a couple of other youngsters with Red Bull Salzburg, Austria Vienna and Celtic. All right, so that is Israel, and we move on to the third team, Romania, with an overview of their participation and achievements. So Romania is the only team to compete in every World Cup and every Euro Cup qualification. I feel a little embarrassed, Connor, because I think I've been saying on a lot of podcasts that Brazil is the only team to compete in every World Cup. I don't know if Romania is the only other, but if there is another, it's a very small group.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to say, "I forgive you, Kevin," or something at this
point. Okay. You are forgiven, but it's new information. If anything, it made it more surprising.
Okay, great. Anyway, Romania's king was very supportive of the soccer team, so he financed their trip to Uruguay in 1930, and the reason there are so few teams who have participated in all World Cup was because the first one required a long boat trip to Uruguay. And Romania decided to do that, and that's the reason for their early start. All right, I'll move along a bit more swiftly here. They had two strong periods in their history. The early period, where they reached the first three World Cups, although they didn't pass the group stage in any of them. The second strong period was in the 1990s, where they not only reached three cups in a row, but passed the group stage in each. Outside of those periods, they only qualified once in 1970. The only reflection of those strong periods in Euro Cup qualifying was in the late 90s, where they qualified for two cups in a row. So that was actually a little bit after their strong period in the World Cup. The second qualification there was in 2000, and that was the only time they passed the group stage. So outside of that period, they qualified three times with no particular pattern. That was in 1984, 2008, and in 2020. But they didn't pass the group stage any of those times. Okay, let's move on to a slightly closer look at the World Cup.
Yeah, Romania qualified for the first three World Cups, as you mentioned, but didn't pass the initial stage in any of them, bested even by Cuba in 1938. They basically disappeared from international soccer after 1938 until 1990, qualifying only for the 1970 World Cup, where they failed to pass the first round. However, they surged in the 90s under their best player ever, George Hagi. There, they not only qualified three times in a row, but passed the group stage every time, reaching the quarterfinals in 1994 for their best finish. In truth, 1998 was a better campaign. They stormed through qualifying in the group stage, tying only the last game in both, but were undone by Croatia in the round of 16. They've been up and down since reaching two UEFA playoffs, since that time, but also finishing the bottom half of the table twice, and 1998 remains their last appearance in the World Cup.
Okay, let's take a look at their Euro Cup, so not as successful there. That also shows their best period to be in the 90s, if a bit later than their World Cup successes. Having qualified only once in 1984, they reached the Cup twice in a row in 1996 and 2000, passing the group stage in the latter, where they lost to Italy in the quarterfinals. Since then, they've qualified twice. That's in 2008, and in the expanded version in 2016, I think above I said 2020, but it was 2016. And in both cases, they fell at the group stage. Their qualification runs in Euro play have been more consistent than in World Cup play. They went undefeated in three campaigns, and that was the three times they reached the Cup, of course. And they were still fairly consistent even when they didn't qualify, going undefeated on the road in 2004 and suffering losses only to the top two teams away in 2012. But they finished far behind in third place at that time. So we move on to our deep dive into Euro Cup qualifying.
Romania joined the first Euro Cup in 1960 and beat Turkey in round one of two of a knockout-style qualification. But in round two, they lost to Czechoslovakia and failed to reach the Cup as they would do until 1984.
Yeah, paired with Spain in the first of three knockout rounds in 1964, they lost 6-0 away in the first leg, so a win in the second leg was pretty meaningless there. In 1968, the qualification turned to a group style qualification, but despite finishing ahead of Switzerland, they were a distant second to Italy.
In 1972, they finished in first, tied with Czechoslovakia, but that was not enough to reach the four-team tournament. A further playoff meant they had to overcome Hungary to get there. The two tied home and away, and a third game in a neutral location was required. They lost that game 2-1, which was their closest brush with the cup in the early years.
1976 saw them undefeated, but tying five of their six games. They came second to Spain, who took the only advancing spot there. And 1980 was the year that saw the tournament expand to eight teams, but they were weak on the road and finished third in the group behind Yugoslavia.
In 1984, they were bested by Czechoslovakia, but otherwise only dropped points on a tie in Italy, who finished a ghastly fourth in the group. Romania's consistency earned them first place and a spot in their first Euro Cup. They might have made it in 1988, too, but a tie with Austria in the last game left them a single point behind Spain.
Ouch. Okay, well, losses in their two opening games of the 1992 campaign was enough to scuttle their chances. But it was a competitive campaign where the top four were separated by just 2 points. Unfortunately, Romania was third in that pile. 1996 saw the Cup expand to 16 teams, and they were coming into their second World Cup qualification in a row. They showed that form here, going undefeated in the six-team qualification group, except for a home loss to France. But that didn't prevent them from winning the group, though, and they reached their second cup.
Their 2000 qualifying was as good as their 1998 World Cup run, and they went undefeated to win the group over Portugal. 2006 was remarkably similar to 1992, where two early losses, both at home, undermined their chances in a competitive group. Once again, the top four were separated by 2 points, and once again they landed third, Denmark and Norway ahead of them.
Yes, 4 years later, they returned with a tremendous campaign in 2008, coming first in a seven-team group. They were, as in 1992, bested by a Bulgaria, who here also finished behind them. But otherwise, they suffered only a draw in Netherlands, who finished in second. 2012 was an odd campaign, beginning and ending with draws against Albania and Belarus, who both finished behind them. But they were third, well behind France and Bosnia and Herzegovina.
They returned to better form in 2016, going undefeated again. So a bit of an up and down pattern for them. Mm-hmm. In this campaign, Romania tied half of their games and finished second behind an impressive Northern Ireland. Second place, though, meant automatic qualification to the Cup, newly expanded to 24 teams.
That's right. And, I think I gave it away earlier, but let's take a look at their Euro Cup 2020 campaign to see if they could reach it again.
They would not. Romania came fourth of six in their qualifying group, losing all their matches to top finishers Spain and Sweden, but tying third place Norway twice. Their only wins were their games with bottom finishers Faroe Islands and Malta. Nevertheless, they qualified for the playoff due to their performance at the 2019-20 Euro Nations League, but they lost in the semifinals to Iceland.
Right, so that was a two-round playoff there. And yes, they didn't make it. Let's see how they did in 2022 World Cup qualifying.
Romania came in as a second seed, but they were bested by North Macedonia, who finished ahead of them, leaving Romania third in the qualifying group. They lost both matches to group winners Germany and bested an Iceland team on the decline. A loss in Armenia also contributed to their non-advancement, as they finished only a point behind North Macedonia. Pick up the playoff spot.
Yeah, that's right. And knocked out Italy too. Okay, on to the 2022 and 23 UEFA Nations League. They were in League B there.
Yeah, and it was a poor campaign. They started with road losses to Montenegro and Bosnia-Herzegovina. A win against Finland was promising, but it was followed up with a 3-0 home loss to Montenegro. They went undefeated in their remaining two games, but they finished bottom of a tight group, all four teams separated by just 4 points. So that means Romania have been relegated to League C. So, yeah, disappointing campaign for them.
Yeah, for a team that sometimes tops their qualifying group, being in League C is a bit of a disappointment. Okay, we finish with a look at their players. So they do await another George Haji, the superstar who led them through their remarkable period in the 1990s. Unfortunately, there's no one close to that on the roster. Their biggest affiliations are relatively unimpressive. I can't remember. I think George Haji played for Barcelona. Would you mind looking that up while I finish?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Anyway, compared to the team he played for, these are much lower. Besiktas in Turkey, Genoa in Italy, and Auxerre in France. Their domestic clubs, Steaua Bucharest and Dinamo Bucharest and CFR Cluj, have had strong periods, but have not been so strong lately. And perhaps the national team's fortunes go up and down with their club teams. The only promising detail is that most of the squad, most of the main squad, is around 25 years old, so they may be reaching their prime.
Yeah, George Haji played not only for Barcelona, but for Real Madrid before that. One of few players to cross that divide.
And he came out of Steaua Bucharest?
He did. He actually played with a couple clubs in Romania, including Constanța and Sportul Studențesc, before Steaua Bucharest. So I guess they can't claim to have fully produced him.
Yeah, I've never heard of those other ones, but Steaua is a... actually, it's not even called Steaua anymore, so I probably should update my understanding of that team. Anyway, onwards and upwards, we move on to Kosovo. And we'll begin with an overview of their participation and achievements. So Kosovo was part of Yugoslavia, although it was recognized as an autonomous province. And they did form their own team before the breakup of Yugoslavia, which played a friendly. After the breakup of Yugoslavia, they also had a team which played against Albania in 1993. Politically, though, they were part of Serbia, and they declared independence in 2008, a result of the population being more Albanian than Serbian. Because their independence was slow in being accepted, they were allowed to play friendlies as a separate country only in 2014, and then they were accepted into UEFA and FIFA in 2015, which was too late for the Euro 2016 qualifying. So that made the 2018 World Cup their first campaign. Do you want to tell us about their achievements?
Yeah, so in terms of achievement, they've come last in their group in their two World Cup campaigns. Their only Euro Cup campaign was much more competitive, and they finished third of five. They also reached a playoff structure due to their performance in the UEFA Nations League, but fell in the semifinal round. So, yeah, a little bit about their brief history.
Yeah, a brief history indeed. And World Cup 2018, is their first, so this is going to be short and sweet, their World Cup overview.
Yes, Kosovo earned only a single point in their first campaign in 2018, but they were more competitive in 2022, earning 5 points, nevertheless finishing last in the table again, but good for them to see that improvement.
Yeah, let's see how it went in Euro Cup, where 2020 was their first campaign. And actually, it was far more competitive than both World Cup campaigns that surrounded it. They finished third in the group ahead of Bulgaria and Montenegro. Third was not an advancing position, but their UEFA Nations League performance did earn them a spot in a playoff structure where they fell first in the, or they fell in the first round of two rounds in the playoff structure. Okay, well, I mean, normally we do a close-up of the Euro Cup, their last campaign, but I pretty much just said that, hey? Do you want to maybe go over any details?
Yeah, I mean, you mostly covered it. They started well, actually, going undefeated in five of their first six games, which saw them in second place before they lost three of their last four. Although two were the group winners, England, and the other was the second place Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. They did best Bulgaria and bottom place finishers Montenegro to finish middle of the pack, as you said. And then they were eliminated in that playoff by North Macedonia, who ended up qualifying for the Cup.
Right. So, you know, that's a pretty different performance in each of their three Cups. So a little bit hard to kind of predict what they're going to be like. Let's take a bit of a closer look at that World Cup 2022 campaign. Not as good as Euro, but a bit better than their first World Cup campaign.
Yeah, they managed two draws with Greece and one in Georgia, but lost a home leg there and finished behind them last in the group. The other teams were Spain and Sweden, so I have to say that was a very difficult group. And so picking up 5 points is actually not all that bad.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Certainly this group gets a bit more opportunity than that. All right, well, again, trying to put a finger on them is a bit tough, but we have the 2022-23 UEFA Nations League campaign, which might help. They are in League C there.
Yeah, League C. They won three and lost three. They beat Cyprus twice, lost to Greece twice, who won the group, and then shared home wins with Northern Ireland. So it was good enough for second place out of the four teams. So they'll remain in League C, but competitive, you'd have to say.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of tough groups, that League C group seems a lot more difficult than Israel's League B group.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, so that, might make them a bit competitive, but we'll get there. We'll end this section with a look at their players. So apart from a 34-year-old goalkeeper, the squad is almost entirely between 23 and 30 years old. So that means they're in their prime playing days. And they also have a few young players coming in. Almost all of the team plays for respectable Euro clubs outside of Kosovo, the biggest being Napoli, Olympiacos, Lille in France, and Galatasaray in Turkey. So pretty respectable looking squad there.
Yeah, more players kind of playing outside their league than Israel and even Romania, if I'm correct on that. So, yeah, some decent affiliations, if that's one measure to go by.
Yeah, it'd be good to put these player ones side by side, as you just did. But, you know, when we look at Belarus, we'll see that Kosovo looks a lot stronger than they do. And speaking of Belarus, we're going to move on to our fifth team in the group, starting with their participation and achievements. So Belarus was part of the USSR until its breakup and first entered the Euro Cup in 1996 and the World Cup in 1998. And they participated in both consistently since. Their best result is coming third in their 2002 World Cup qualifying group, and that's their only finish in the top half of a table. They did reach a playoff for the 2020 Euro Cup, but they had finished fourth of five in the group and earned that advancing position only through their UEFA Nations League play. Mm-hmm. All right, let's look at the World Cup.
So Belarus have finished at the bottom of their World Cup qualifying group half the time, including in the last three campaigns. 2002 was their best campaign, finishing third of six for their only venture into the top half of the table. They managed to avoid last place in the following two campaigns, but have since returned to the bottom where they landed in their first qualification run in 1998.
All right. Well, let's take a look at Euro and see if that's any better. Euro qualifying is something of a mirror image, finishing last in the middle years, but fourth in the initial and in recent campaigns. They've consistently finished fourth of sixth or seven since 2008. And this includes 2020, though it is masked by their having reached a playoff structure there. And that was due to their Nations League record, as we said. and they were quickly knocked out in the semi-final round. So in Euro Cup qualification particularly, they were usually good for a shocking spoiler result, as they specialise in taking their spoiler points off of the top teams, as we'll see in the deep dive. Sadly, though, this has dried up in recent campaigns.
Always a bit of excitement when you have a spoiler in the group.
Yeah, and it is interesting that Belarus tends to spoil not the middling teams, but the best ones. So let's begin the deep dive in 1996, their first campaign.
Yeah, so their first campaign in 1996 featured a home win over the Netherlands to spoil their campaign. There you go.
Yeah.
They were otherwise fairly consistent
over the weaker teams.
Yeah, the weaker teams. They did tie in Luxembourg, but finished ahead of them for a fourth of six.
All right. Well, 2000 saw them in a group with no weak teams, and so they finished last in the group. However, they did tie group winner Italy as well as second place Denmark at home. 2004, though, had no such spoilers, and their only points were a win at home over Moldova, although they did finish in last place behind them.
Belarus were far more competitive in 2008. They bested Albania and traded wind with Luxembourg and Slovenia, but they rose above these teams only in the last game when they once again beat Netherlands at home. They finished fourth in their group of seven. Netherlands, by the way, still managed to qualify.
Yes, that's right. Okay, well, 2012 saw them grouped with Luxembourg for the first time in a row and for the fourth time in their European qualification history. And once again, they tied them on the road. Only in 2008 had they won that fixture, but in that campaign, they had lost to them at home. Regardless, they bested both them and Macedonia here to once again finish fourth. Their only other points a win away against their second place finisher, Slovakia. Sorry, I think I was on the wrong page there. Yeah. Okay, so 2016, fourth place once again. Okay, so we move on to the Euro Cup, a closer look at the most recent campaign.
Yeah, so there Belarus managed only to beat Estonia to finish fourth in the qualifying group ahead of them. That was a five-team group. But they lost all games to Germany, Netherlands, and Scotland. They nevertheless qualified for the playoff due to the performance in the 2019-20 Euro Nations League, but they lost the semifinal in Georgia.
Right. Okay, well, how about World Cup 2022?
They won their opener against Estonia, but then lost all their other games and finished last in the qualifying group. Behind Belgium, Wales, and Czech Republic. So rough campaign for Belarus there.
Yeah, all of their points in the last two campaigns coming over Estonia. Finally, we'll look at the 2022-23 UEFA Nations League campaign. They were in League C.
They were in League C and they actually failed to win a game. It did include three draws and three losses, but they finished last in a group, actually well behind the other teams, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan and Slovakia, and they actually have been relegated to League D, which is the lowest tier of the Nations League.
Yeah, so they're definitely in a relative slump in their history. We'll finish with a look at their players here. Most players are with their top clubs, Dynamo Minsk and Bate Borisov. Those two enjoyed good periods in the Europa or even the Champions League, but have since, like the national team, fallen on weaker times. Those who play abroad are with teams in Russia, Cyprus, Israel, and Kazakhstan. Probably the biggest club affiliation is Rostov in Russia, although that 30-year-old player has just seven caps for the national team. So I got to say, there's really nothing promising on the Belarusian team.
Do you remember which Belarusian player played in the Premier League?
Oh, yeah, so he was with Arsenal and Alexander something.
Yeah, Alexander Kleb.
Kleb, yes. Yeah, boy, that was quite a while ago, though.
Yeah, they could use a player like that now, but no signs of it.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of weaker teams like this often do depend on kind of one star player, hey? All right. Well, we move on to. Sorry, did I interrupt you there?
Nope. Let's talk about Andorra.
Right. So, first international game was in 1996, and they began participation in tournaments with the Euro 2000, playing every competition since. Their first three campaigns saw them losing all games, and they got the reputation as a feeble team. Apart from 2006, where they earned 5 points, that continued until 2018, from which time they began earning a few points in each campaign. In 2020 Euro Cup qualifying, they finished out of the bottom spot for the first time and then repeated that feat in 2022 World Cup qualification. So let's take a look at World Cup history in a bit more detail.
2006 World Cup qualification was the only campaign until 2018, I believe, where they earned points. Despite results in three games, including besting Macedonia, they still finished last. A hope that that was a sign of improvement was dashed in 2008 Euro Cup qualifying with one of their worst campaigns ever. They went back to the form of losing all games until 2018 World Cup qualifying, where they earned points in two games, including their first qualification win over an embarrassed Hungary. In 2022, they were grouped with San Marino, and two wins there, their only points, saw them finish out of last place for the first time in World Cup qualifying history.
Right, and their Euro Cup qualifying history is very similar to that of the World Cup, without the good performance in 2006. In Euro Cup qualification, they lost all games in all campaigns until 2020. But in 2020, they earned 4 points over two games, enough to finish out of the bottom for the first time in their qualifying history. All right, let's take our deep dive into Euro Cup qualifying history, beginning with 2000.
So weak was Andorra's history in Euro qualifying that progress can only be measured by their goals record, particularly goals against, or perhaps by games lost only by a single goal. Their first campaign in 2000 was respectable in that they lost only two of their 10 games by a margin of 4 goals or more. They had one game where they lost by a single goal, that was against Russia at home, and they scored 3 goals, which would be their best tally until 2016. The goals against record was a respectable 2.8 goals against per game.
Yeah, that's not too bad. 2004 was better still. It began well with two games lost by one goal margins. Those were to Belgium and Bulgaria. And their biggest margin of loss was 3 goals, a 3-0 loss. And the goals against average there was 2.25 goals per game, so quite a bit lower.
2008 followed a good World Cup campaign in 2006, where they earned 5 points. But any hopes of improvement were sadly dashed here, with 3 games lost by 5 goals or more, and a goals record of 2 scored and 42 against over 12 games, dropping their goals against average to 3.5. Once again, though, they troubled Russia, losing just 1-0 in their final game.
Yeah, and they had three such scorelines in 2012, including 2-0-1 losses to Slovakia. Their goals against average returned to a respectable 2.5 goals against a game and would have been lower except for a 6-0 loss to Russia in their last game.
2016 was as bad as 2008, though. With no weak teams in the group, they finished 12 points behind a competitive Cyprus, and only in their first game against Wales did they manage a 1-goal margin. Goals against fell to 3.6 per game, but they did score 4 goals for their best tally in Euro qualifying.
All right, and that moves us on to their most recent campaign, Euro 2020, and they earned a couple of points there.
They did, and in fact, had a great achievement to finish 5th out of 6 ahead of Moldova, who they beat at home. A tie with 4th place Albania on the road gave them the edge. They also had very respectable score lines against France, Turkey, and Iceland too, averaging only 2 goals against per game.
Well, good. Yes, sorry, World Cup 2022 qualifying then, and we also know that was a bit of an improvement.
Yeah, as you mentioned, they beat San Marino in both legs, but otherwise lost all other games, and they finished fifth of six in the qualifying group, but not last, so yeah, a positive.
Yeah, and 2.4 goals per game in that one, goals against. So I remember when we did San Marino, we were saying for them anything under four goals a game was relatively good. Andorra seems to have a lot of campaigns with about 2.5 goals against per game, which is pretty respectable. Okay, we'll finish with the 2022-23 UEFA Nations League campaign. And they were in League D there.
Yeah, the lowest tier. But the Nations League is particularly good for these smaller teams to see how they measure up against similar smaller countries. Mm-hmm. And Andorra had a decent campaign. They were undefeated at home and also won a game on the road. They beat Liechtenstein home and away. Their losses on the road were in Latvia and Moldova, but they finished with a respectable record of 2 wins, 2 draws, and 2 defeats. It meant third place out of four, so they'll remain in League D. But again, points to some signs of improvement.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and we'll finish with a look at their players. Half of the players are with Andorran teams, and the rest play for low-level clubs, mostly in Spain. Three veterans continue on the team. Marc Puyol, he's 40 years old with 107 caps. Captain Marcio Vieira, 28 years old but 117 caps. And goalkeeper Josep Gomez, 37 year old with 82 caps. Several other players are in their early 30s, and the starting squad is pretty mature, with most players 25 or older. They have a couple of promising youths in 20-year-old goalkeeper who's with Valencia's B team, and a 20-year-old striker with Real Betis's B team. So maybe some upcoming potential there. All right, and that brings us to the end of the team-by-team history there. We move on to part three, where we are going to begin by looking at the pots that the teams come from.
That's right. The pot one team here is Switzerland. They were actually ninth out of the 10 teams, but it's based on Nations League performance. But they have a good, you know, World Cup qualifying record, so I think they are a pot one team. The pot two team is Israel. They came kind of from the middle of the pack of pot two, being promoted from Nations League B, earning them a pot two place. The pot three team is Romania. Their poor performance in relegation saw them kind of at the bottom of pot three. The pot four team was Kosovo. They were 7th of 10 in terms of the rankings. The pot five team, Belarus, was kind of again near the middle of pot five. And then you have Andorra. They were the third lowest ranked team coming into this tournament, just San Marino and Liechtenstein behind them.
Yeah, so I would say this is definitely one of the weaker groups, and really a good opportunity for the teams that are in it.
Definitely, yeah.
All right, well, the next thing we're going to look at is the rankings. Connor has kind of said the UEFA rankings that he just went over aren't really representative of the team strength. So we look at FIFA and ELO rankings.
Yeah, beginning with Switzerland. They're 12th according to FIFA and 16th in the ELO rankings. They've actually been a top 20 team for several years now, peaking as high as 6th in the FIFA rankings in June 2018.
Okay, and second team is Pot 2 Israel.
Yeah, so Israel are 76th in FIFA, so quite low for a Pot 2 team, and 56th in ELO. They've actually been pretty consistently higher in ELO than in FIFA over the last little while. FIFA, they've kind of ranged between about 76 and really 100th, whereas ELO, they've kind of been in the 50s to 70s.
Right, and at least in FIFA rankings, they're quite far below Pot 3 team Romania.
Yeah, Romania are 52nd in FIFA, but 60th in ELO. Romania actually have had kind of a slow and steady decline from 24th in 2018 in the FIFA rankings and 30th in ELO. So, yeah, kind of a slow fall for them.
Yeah, up to 12th with that great campaign in 2016. But they are behind them in the ELO rankings, which is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Pot for Kosovo.
Yeah, Kosovo are 107th in FIFA and 79th in ELO. They've actually never broken the 100 barrier in FIFA, but in ELO, they've actually rarely been behind it, being above 100 since June 2018. And personally, I think that's a little bit, their ELO is a bit more reflective of their actual strength.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Okay, pot five, Belarus.
Belarus, they're around the 100th mark in both systems, so 97th in FIFA and 100th in ELO. So their FIFA ranking puts them ahead of Kosovo, but their ELO ranking puts them quite a bit below Kosovo. We'll discuss that. Yeah, Belarus have also shown a bit of a decline over the last several years. In 2018, they were 70 in the 70s in both rankings and have kind of fallen by 20 to 30 places in both systems.
Yeah, and that does reflect in their results, because they usually finish fourth in their group, but haven't done that for a few campaigns. Finally, Andorra.
Andorra are 153rd in FIFA and 174th in ELO. Their ELO actually shows pretty much a progressive rise, slow but steady over the last 10 years, whereas their FIFA is more up and down. There's more opportunities for movement at the bottom, so they've kind of swung between 203rd and 130th, but 153rd is actually probably a little bit above their recent average.
Yeah, they were below 200 for a long, long time. Okay, the next thing we're going to look at is the head-to-head record. So we've kind of organized this by either the team with the winning record or the team in the higher pot if they haven't played each other. And we begin with Switzerland.
Yeah, Switzerland has an even record with Israel, a bizarre record, actually. They've met four times and tied all four games.
Yeah, that right. And that was in the group of ties in 2006 World Cup qualifying and also in the following World Cup in 2010, all four ties.
Switzerland also have an even record with Romania, but this is a bit different. It's four wins, three draws, and four losses. So even record between Switzerland and Romania.
Yeah, and their most recent meeting was in 2016, actually in the group stage there, and they tied 1-1, so fairly even there.
Yeah. Switzerland haven't met Kosovo, not surprising given Kosovo's short history, but Switzerland have played Belarus twice and won both those matches.
That was way back in 2000, so not that relevant.
And then Switzerland's also met Andorra twice and similarly has won both those matches.
Right. And that was recently in 2018 World Cup qualifying. So moving on to Israel.
We already talked about Israel and Switzerland with their four draws, but Israel hasn't met Kosovo or Belarus. They have met Andorra, though, four games and four wins for Israel.
Yeah, 2008 and 2016 qualifying campaigns there. Romania, though, have a good record over a couple of teams here.
Yeah, and they have the winning record by Israel, albeit slight, one win and one draw from two matches played.
Yeah, they only met once in 1996 Euro Cup qualifying.
Romania have not played Kosovo, but they have played Belarus and have two wins and two draws.
Yeah, and that was a 2012 Euro Cup campaign, their most recent meeting, and they tied both legs there.
Yeah, and then Romania and Andorra, four matches have seen four Romanian wins.
Yeah, 2006 World Cup and 2014 World Cup there. Yeah. Kosovo.
Kosovo haven't played Belarus or Andorra, so they actually haven't played any of these teams before. So they'll be starting their history with all five of them.
That's right. Okay, and finally we have Belarus and Andorra.
Yeah, two matches played and two wins for Belarus.
Yeah, in the 2010 World Cup qualifying campaign. So that pretty much goes along with the pot, except Romania probably has more winning records than Israel there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to the odds makers. What do the odds makers say?
The odds makers favor Switzerland quite heavily. They're given 78% chance to win the group. Romania is a second with 22% chance. That's considerably higher than the 6% chance given to Israel or the 4% chance over Kosovo. And then Belarus and Andorra are really outsiders. Belarus 0.3% and Andorra 0.1% chance of topping the group.
All right, and let's begin the discussion there. Do you disagree with any of those odds?
I do. I do think Romania are overestimated quite a bit, especially relative to Israel and Kosovo. I think those three teams, you know, could prove to be relatively even, certainly more so than the odds suggest. You know, I think Romania, we've seen in the rankings a bit of a decline, you know, relegation in the Nations League, kind of unimpressive results in recent World Cup and Euro campaigns. So I really, you know, they have a good history, but I don't think that 22% is representative of their current form.
Yeah, it's almost like it's based on their history, because they have kind of popped up and won groups sometimes, which Israel and Kosovo haven't. But as you say, their form is so weak coming into this that that number does seem a little bit high. I think we have a bit of an ongoing disagreement, because I'm going to once again say Switzerland is lucky in their grouping. And I've said in previous podcasts that... I feel like Switzerland always gets lucky with their groupings, or often gets lucky. What do you think here?
I would have to say they're fairly lucky this time. I don't always agree with you. I think Switzerland are a good team, and like you said, it's an ongoing debate. But this is a group that is easy. I don't really see a genuine kind of pot two team in this group. So I think Switzerland should have no problem. They're consistent, and that's why Switzerland, do well in tournaments and get the tournaments, because of their general consistency, especially in World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, I mean, that's why that big loss to Portugal in the last World Cup was such a surprise, because they really are, if nothing else, a consistent team. They don't often beat the best, but they don't often play the best, because they're lucky in their groupings. But definitely against the teams in this group, I don't see them struggling much. Maybe a dropped point here or there, hey?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, nevertheless, despite Romania being so favoured by the odds makers, do you see them as second, or do you see it as a bit of a mix-up among these teams?
I see it as a bit of a mix-up. I see kind of arguments for and against all these teams. I would almost argue that Kosovo have some of the best club affiliations in terms of some of their players. And they've put in some decent performances in recent times. I think Israel, they've kind of been a third place, even a playoff team sometimes. So I think this is a real opportunity for them to go and grab second. It's an opportunity for Romania as well, but I just see... Again, I just see the recent form not really convincing me. So I think it's open, as going back to kind of our hook, that Israel or Kosovo, who've never qualified for the Euros, I think we could see a first timer coming out of this group.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the form is one thing, and I think maybe Israel is at 6% because their claim to being a pot two team is based on their UEFA Nations League record, where Russia was disqualified from their group, and they only had to beat Iceland and Albania to get the kind of pot ranking that they did. But we did see they're still ahead of Romania. I believe it was in ELO rankings. Which actually took me by surprise. So I'm trying to decide in my mind whether they're kind of pretenders here as a pot two team, or whether they have a valid chance. But rather than looking at it in terms of form, you know, Romania's form is poor, Kosovo is a bit hard to read. I'm kind of thinking this group more in terms of what you mentioned, the kind of quality of the teams based on their club affiliations. And I would put them in reverse order as far as that goes, Kosovo and then Romania. Israel has just lost their two biggest scorers, and they do have the Fulham player. What was his name again?
Oh, yeah, Manor Solomon.
Yeah, they do have him coming in, but I think they're going to be really struggling losing those two forwards, and also a big midfielder, or an important midfielder for them in Nacho. So I can't kind of help but and this is actually just through the course of our podcast here. I'm almost putting Kosovo in second place. Romania, I always thought, were stronger than Israel here. And Israel in fourth place, but who knows?
Yeah, I have to say it's a shame that Erhan Zahavi's not playing, because I would actually, if he was there, he has a great goal scoring record, including in qualifying.
Oh yeah,
I would actually probably favor Israel to be second. So I think it's a shame for Israel without that kind of genuine goal scorer. You know, it's tough to say that they would be second place. But, you know, like I said, there's arguments in favor of each of these three teams. And I think it's really wide open.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I would rate Israel a lot higher if Zahavi was there. And I don't know what's going on with Dabur, because he's only 30 years old and he's listed as retired from the team. But yeah, I mean, I think the big issue for them at least will be where are they going to get their goals from?
Yeah, we've kind of neglected Belarus or Andorra so far. So maybe you want to start with a conversation on those two teams.
Yeah, well, you know, we know Belarus is in kind of poor form nowadays, and they're usually a team that finishes fourth in the group. So that kind of should put them in the mix a little bit here. It's only really recent form that maybe keeps them out of the discussion. But then again, I look at their squad there too, and the two big teams in Belarus kind of used to be involved in European play, and now they've kind of dropped out. So I just don't see it in terms of form, but in terms of history, they could work their way back into it. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the evidence we've talked about, recent campaigns, rankings, has seen a bit of a fall from grace for Belarus. Kind of falling into the category of the weaker teams in UEFA. Mm-hmm. So I don't see an argument for them to compete with the other four teams that we've mentioned. And I think a bad campaign could actually see them kind of neck and neck with Andorra, a moderately improving Andorra, it has to be said. So yeah, I think they're more likely to be struggling at the bottom.
I think that's going a bit too far. I think they'd have to have a really ghastly campaign to finish behind Andorra. But as you said, you know, Andorra could take a few points in this group, definitely. And if they can turn those kind of one-goal margin losses into draws, they could cause a bit of trouble in this group, especially if that middle three is pretty tight. You know, it could come down to it could come down to points lost against Belarus and Andorra, because I'm sure Belarus will at least take a couple of points.
Yeah, I think that's just it. I think of the Israel, Romania, Kosovo, it'll be who will be the most consistent in what's going to be, I think, a very competitive group.
All right. Well, Connor, I grow weary. I grow weary with your equivocation. And I, you know, on the podcast, we need to appear confident. Give me what you got. How is this group going to end?
I'm going to go Switzerland first. It does get tricky for me after this, but I'm going to go Israel. I think their time is due. Then I'm going to say Kosovo and then Romania. And then I'm going to say Belarus and Andorra.
Be bold. Put Andorra ahead of Belarus.
All right, I'll do it.
No, really?
I definitely feel it's a possibility. Okay, maybe I'm not bold, confident enough to do it. But if it does happen, you heard it here first.
No, not unless you say it here.
Okay, I'll say it.
All right. Well, we're a little bit different here again. Of course, we both have Switzerland on top. As we've been recording this podcast, kind of Kosovo is growing in my mind, especially in terms of their squad. I've always considered them, or always being since they've been around, but a bit of a black box. And the campaigns they've had don't really clarify that, but the squad they have seems the best here. So I'm going to go be bold and say Switzerland, Kosovo. I'm going to say Romania and then Israel, because to me, Israel's lack of scorers is a problem. And I finished with Belarus and Andorra, but definitely that middle three is a bit up in the air. All right, well, let's move on to the last section here and the opening game. So they played a couple of games in, or a couple of sets of games in March. And I have not looked at the results. I've been saving myself for this podcast, but Connor does know the results. What do we have?
So first up, we have Belarus versus Switzerland.
All right. Well, in their historical form, I think Belarus is capable of an upset. We actually saw in the deep dive that the teams they tend to get spoiler results against are the best teams, not necessarily the middling teams. So I do think that's an outside possibility here, but their form has been so poor in the last few campaigns, and Switzerland is very consistent. So I'll say 2-1 Switzerland.
It was 5-0 for Switzerland. So Belarus's poor form continues.
Yeah, a lot of wasted words there. Okay.
Next we have Israel Kosovo.
Oh, well, I think this is a crucial game in that battle that we've been talked about. I wouldn't be shocked to see Kosovo get something out of this, but I'm going to say 2-1 Israel.
Kosovo actually did get something out of it. It was a 1-1 draw, so good result for them to begin their campaign.
Yeah, especially in this tight group. Andorra and Romania. Well, I do think Andorra may get a couple of points out of this campaign. And, well, I guess this is a place where they could get them if Romania remains inconsistent, but I don't think so. I will say a decent scoreline of 2-0 Romania.
2-0 was the score. So Andorra, you know, we've seen their defense has been good recently, so they kept the score down. 2-0 the final.
All right, so Switzerland already off to a big lead there. And the second set of games, what do we have?
We begin with Kosovo versus Andorra.
Okay, well, this this will be a test of Kosovo's consistency, and I think they'll do it. But again, a respectable scoreline. Maybe I'll say 2-0 here, or maybe 3-0. I'll go 2-0.
Interesting result here. It was a 1-1 draw. Kosovo scoring in the 59th minute and Andorra scoring 2 minutes later.
Wow, good for Andorra. They really are getting better. Well, that shakes things up a bit. What do we have next?
Next is Romania versus Belarus.
Well, Romania didn't do that well. They did beat Andorra. Belarus was awful in their first game, so I think this will be a fairly easy win for Romania. I'll say 2-0.
It was 2-1, but to be fair, Belarus's goal was a late consolation. So 2-1 Romania.
2-1. And Switzerland against Israel. Switzerland, again, very consistent team. Israel was a bit disappointing in their first one at home. And maybe I didn't take the difficulty in scoring goals into account. So I'm going to say Switzerland 2-0 here.
Switzerland won 3-0. So asserting themselves as the best team in the group so far.
Yeah, they're almost already unassailable because the teams below them are exchanging points with each other. Well, now we go over to you for the June games, which haven't been played yet. So the first one is Andorra at home to Switzerland.
I see nothing other than a convincing Swiss win. I'm going to say 4-0 Switzerland, who have been scoring goals in this campaign.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I was going to say 3-0, but you give me a bit of food for thought there, but I'll stick with that. Belarus at home to Israel.
Well, I predicted Israel second and Belarus last. So I guess that leads me to an Israeli win, which I actually would have probably said anyways. I'm going to say 1-0 Israel.
All right. I think there is an outside chance of a tie here because I think Belarus will get some points. And I put Israel as the weakest team among the three. So I'm going to be bold and say 1-1, although I'll say 1-1 favoring Israel.
All right.
And last one is Kosovo and Romania.
Well, this is shaping up to be a really crucial game already. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say it will decide nothing because it'll be a 1-1 draw.
Ooh, yeah, well, I had, I had picked Kosovo as my second place team, but that's not working out. 2-1-1 draws so far. So I am going to abandon my Kosovo thing and say 1-1 here also.
All right.
Okay. Well,
A couple games, Switzerland and Romania topped the group with 2 wins each. Romania's wins though coming against Andorra and Belarus. Yeah. Kosovo has 2 draws. Andorra and Israel have a point each, and Belarus are last. So Andorra's ahead of Belarus. Point that out.
Well, you can claim a big prize if you come out the winner on that. I'll be impressed. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of Group I, and we will be back with Group J. That's the last of the groups. Good talking to you about this, Connor.
Yeah, see you next time for Group J.
All right, we'll finish the podcast today with a look back on what we have covered until now, with a particular focus on which media casts are still relevant. Prior to that, we're going to look at what is upcoming over the rest of the year, because I think that may be of more interest. So we'll put a graphic up with all of this information, both past, current, and present, on the YouTube version, and we'll also include it in the show notes. So let's take a look at upcoming series. So right now we're on series 14. And I'll give a bit more information about that too. But Series 15 will be a shorter version of Series 14, the 2024 Euro qualifying series. So rather than the detailed history, it'll have a short summary of each team in the group and a section on their recent form. So from there, part 3 of Series 14 will be the same in both the short and long series. That's a comparison of teams through rankings, odds, and head-to-head records, as well as Kevin O'Connor's discussion, and ending with a review of the first 2 sets of games that were played in March 2023. After this Euro 2024 qualifying, 16 and 17, series 16 and 17, will be a preview of the 2023 Gold Cup. That tournament is set to start on June 24th, 2023. So we plan to put out those podcasts or those media casts in late May or early June. So Series 16 will focus on the groups and teams, and Series 17 will focus on the players of each team. Qualification is actually taking place through the CONCACAF Nations League currently. But we don't intend to do a series on qualification for the CONCACAF Gold Cup there. During the summer, we are planning a series on CONMEBOL, that's South American World Cup 2026 qualifying. That begins in September 2023. We also may get an early start on Asian Cup 2023, although that's due to start later in January 2024. In the fall, we're going to preview the early rounds of AFC World Cup 2026 qualifying. That'll take place in October and November, so we'll do it prior to that. And this will actually give us a first look at some of the weaker teams in the Asian region, which we haven't covered yet. Also, we will preview the 2023 African Cup. It is called that, even though it's due to start in January 2024. So those are the upcoming series, and now let's take a look at our current series, so the current media cast. We call it a media cast because it's available with visuals on YouTube, and it's available as a podcast, and you can find it on most podcast catchers or on our website at soccerfiles.captivate.fm. We'll also put up a graphic with that on it. So the current series is Series 14, and that's a preview of the groups in Euro 2024 qualifying. And this gives us a chance to get to know teams that don't often make it to the tournaments. So it features a deep dive into the Euro Cup qualifying histories of the team. And we started actually after the first round of games in March 2023 to make it a bit more interesting. So as mentioned, we'll follow that with Series 15. That's a shortened version of Euro 2024 qualifying, because some members of the audience don't want such a deep dive. Now, let's look back at our previous media cap series. I think they're still relevant to various degrees. And, well, they tend to be relevant in reverse order. So we'll actually kind of go backwards in time here. So Series 10 to 13 were all based on the 2022 World Cup. Series 10 was an eight-part group-by-group preview of the 14 groups in the tournament. It featured a deep dive into the World Cup finals history of each team. Series 11 was a 32-part team-by-team preview of players in World Cup 2022. So we didn't know at the time which players would be selected, so we went through the candidates for each position and gave information about them. So that'll still be relevant for a lot of the teams. Series 12 actually featured shortened versions of each of Series 10 and 11, so a shorter version on the teams and on the players. And then Series 13 was a 25-part review or update of the team-by-team players podcast. And it was published after the teams had selected their squads for the finals. So it went through the candidates that we had discussed in Series 11 and introduced any new players that made it to the final squad. Unfortunately, we ran out of time before finishing all 32 teams. And I particularly regret that in the case of Ghana, because they brought a lot of new players in that were not considered in our Series 11 preview of the Ghana players. Anyway, these World Cup podcasts, especially the player ones, are still relevant because the squads haven't changed that much. We will be doing future player podcasts before each major tournament. So going back before that, Series 9 is actually probably the most relevant. It was a 12-part preview of the African Cup 2023 qualifying groups. It's still called African Cup 2023. It was originally set to take place that year, or this year, I should say, but now it's been moved to January 2024. So qualification games were also postponed, and the qualification is still unfinished. So as I said, that makes it still quite relevant. Series 7 and 8 were both based on the 2021 African Cup, which took place in January 2022. That's good for a look at some of the smaller African teams who made it to the expanded cup. Series 7 was a six-part overview of the teams in African Cup 2022. It's confusing. It's still called African Cup 2021, but it took place in January 2022. While the overviews were repeated in Series 9, this did feature a deep dive into the African Cup finals history of the participants. Series 8 was a 24-part team-by-team preview of the players for the African Cup. For the African teams that made the 2022 World Cup, the player podcasts will be updated, but for the smaller teams, they won't be. So for many teams, it remains the most relevant. And it has soccer information that doesn't seem to exist in other media casts, as far as I know. Okay, I'm moving back before that. Series 4 and 6 focused on the CONCACAF regions, specifically the 18 final round of qualifying for the 2022 World Cup. Series 4 was an eight-part look at each team and their players in the final round, and it featured a deep dive into each team's World Cup qualification history. It also had a team-by-team preview of the players in CONCACAF there. It really should have been a separate series number, to be honest. But nevertheless, the current players on the squad were examined for each of the eight teams. Series 6 was a mid-round update of that CONCACAF 2022 World Cup qualifying campaign. So Series 4 and 6 kind of go together. Okay, Series 5, that's in between the two CONCACAF series, was a preview of the Asian World Cup qualifying final round. So this was just a two-part series on each of the 16 groups that made it to the final round of World Cup qualifying in the Asian region. So this remains relevant for all Asian teams that didn't reach the World Cup, but for Iran, Japan, South Korea, and Saudi Arabia, Series 10 in their World Cup introduction is more current. Series 3 was a four-part preview for the groups for Gold Cup 2021 in the CONCACAF region, and this remains relevant for some of the smaller teams in the tournament, but again, those who participated in the World Cup were updated after that. Series 2 was a two-part preview of the groups for Copa America 2021 in the South American region. So that again remains relevant for the smaller teams in the region, but the teams that made the World Cup were updated in Series 10. And our first series was a preview of the 2020 Euro Cup played in 2021. Again, teams that reached the 2022 World Cup were updated there. And it did feature a deep dive into Euro Cup finals history. So, again, for the smaller teams that we haven't covered since, it remains relevant. Okay, I think that brings us to the end. So keep your eye out for the graphics on the show notes or on the YouTube. And I hope to join us for the upcoming series and even go back and review some of the old series until we update them again. Bye-bye.